Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and thank you for joining us on Free Way. We are the show that tackles some pretty difficult topics today, sometimes, and today we're actually tackling a very useful topic, and by useful I mean that I read a study or I'm having problems with my computer this morning, so bear with us, okay? Hopefully that'll be the last glitch that you hear. The report came out, or it was actually a news article here in Washington State, and our Washington State Poison Center, or I guess it was the County Health Department, came out with a report that said that there is an increase in marijuana intoxication among King County children, and they are the way these kids are getting poisoned by the marijuana is they're eating it. They're finding it laying around, and they're eating it. And that had me thinking, you know, Washington State is one of the few states that actually has legalized marijuana. So maybe with that new relaxed approach toward marijuana in this state, we're no longer looking at it as some sort of horrible, awful heroin kind of thing. But maybe with that more relaxed interpretation of marijuana, we're getting a little sloppy and forgetting that it, in fact, is something that can be pretty darn dangerous, especially if you're a little person. So that got me to thinking about all sorts of ways that we don't think about things that in fact, can be really, really harmful to kids. So in my calling around and in my research, I was able to meet a wonderful man named Alexander Gerard. Dr. Gerard, thank you for joining us. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Dr. Gerard is a clinical toxicologist, and he is the clinical managing director of the Washington State Poison Control Center. So in other words, he does the management and the direction and the leadership for the Washington State Poison Center, and he also teaches as an assistant professor at the University of Washington School of Pharmacy. So he has a lot of experience and a lot of medical experience and a lot of practical experience. Plus, if you saw his picture on my website, he's cute. So thank you for joining us, Dr. Gerard.
Thanks for having me.
I'm really curious, you know, as I said, my interest in this topic was triggered by a news article about the increase in edible marijuana intoxication among King County children. I did a little research, and it turns out that we're not the only area that's seeing an increase in that, and that it's not just marijuana. So what are you seeing? Let's start with marijuana. What are you seeing as some fallout from our more relaxed attitudes and more easily available marijuana?
Sure. No, that's a great question. So, you know, really what we're seeing is the number of calls coming into the Poison Center have actually been on the increase for about 10 years now. Medical marijuana was legalized in Washington State in 1998. And we saw a spike in calls around that time, and then it kind of dropped off a little bit. But like I said, over the past 10 years, those calls coming into the Poison Center have been on the increase. And so this could suggest a number of different things. For one, especially with the legalization now of recreational marijuana, it could suggest perhaps that people are more comfortable calling the Poison Center because there's no fear of legal prosecution. Not that the Poison Center at any point in time was reporting people to the police for using illicit substances, but I think it's just kind of the culture. Like, okay, it's legal now. I'm not going to get in trouble if something happens. It could also be, especially for adults, parents, caregivers, the fear of, you know, child protective services. So if I were to call about my child who got into marijuana, is child protective services going to get involved? So we've been doing a lot of education out there to say, you know, none of these things are gonna happen. We're here to help you. And so that could be one of the reasons why those calls have been increasing. I typically say nobody calls us if they're having a good time. So the numbers that we report, you know, the numbers that we report at the Poison Center are really probably an underestimate of what the true occurrence is. So as an example, just last year here, 2014, into the Washington Poison Center, we had 245 calls regarding marijuana exposures. Now, these are situations where an individual, whether it be an adult or a child, came in contact with marijuana, some form of it, through some route that really wasn't meant to be there, or they had a bad experience with it.
And that
does
happen.
It does happen, absolutely. You know, the marijuana of today is much more potent than it was 30, 40 years ago. So we have some of our older adults even, you know, 80, 90 years of age, who used marijuana back in their heyday and say, you know what, now that it's legal, I want to give it another shot. And then they smoke the same amount that they did back then, and then they have this adverse reaction. So they have this negative experience, they have the paranoia, maybe increased heart rate, some agitation, and they end up having to go to the hospital and saying, you know what, this is not the marijuana that I remember. It's a lot more potent today. And also, you know, the other thing, too, is just all of the stores that are now available. So there are about 170 retail stores in the state that are selling marijuana. So there is some truth to the fact that it is more readily available. And people tend to sometimes forget the fact that it still is a drug. It may be a natural plant, you know, from nature. So that doesn't necessarily mean it's safe. It just means
I always
that
say,
perhaps,
you know, so natural doesn't mean anything. I mean, digitalis is natural. Doesn't mean
exactly.
It will kill you, you know.
I know. Well, and several of our chemotherapy drugs used to treat cancer are actually derived from plants themselves. So
sure.
Just to kind of, you know, put that into perspective. So I think there's that kind of a lot of education needs to be done on this is still a drug. You know, these a lot of these products do look like regular products, brownies, candy bars that you can buy, you know, at a regular local supermarket. So it's easy to confuse the two products at times.
Mm-hmm. Especially for a child. Now,
yeah.
I was reading the CDC information, and
mm-hmm.
their report says that every day 300 children in the United States ages 0 to 19, I find it interesting that they include all the way up to 19 as children. Because most of the teenagers I know are who are accessing marijuana are not doing it accidentally. I mean, they're doing it on purpose. But nevertheless, they include all the way up to age 19. My thinking is that, you know, what we really need to be concerned about are the young children that don't know what they're going for, that are just going after that brownie that's left laying out because it looks like it's good. I mean, let's face it, children will eat, you know, drain cleaner if it looks like it's interesting, you know. So let's focus our conversation on those little ones. And
yeah,
you mentioned the products that are available, you know, they look like regular food. So is that how kids are getting this, little kids? It just looks good and people forget and they leave it out?
Yeah, so, you know, when I've reviewed the cases that are coming into the Poison Center regarding marijuana exposures and edibles, common scenarios are that, you know, these products are just kind of left laying out on the countertop. Or perhaps they're in a purse or in a gym bag. And, you know, 56% of our calls are in children under 6 years of age. So that's the majority of the cases that we get. And as such, you know, kids of that age are generally exploring their environment. They're developing hand-eye coordination. They're very curious. You know, we talk about, like, the terrible twos and people 2 to 3 years of age. I mean, just a lot of issues, you know, a lot of learning. And so these scenarios where the edible, let's say the brownie, is left on the countertop, kind of unwrapped, it's left out of its packaging, the child doesn't know the difference. They're not going to recognize that as a marijuana brownie because it doesn't look any different than a regular kind of, say, Betty Crocker brownie or what have you, or a homemade product.
Mm-hmm.
Complicate that even further that, so you have your recreational stuff that you buy at the store, but then you have also individuals that are making it at home. So, and who knows what the concentration of marijuana is in those particular products. So I think it's important for parents, adults, caregivers, even siblings, to recognize, you know, keep this stuff out of reach of kids. Don't use it around young children. Don't talk about it in such a way that encourages curiosity or like, oh, wow, that looks great. You know, don't leave it in your purse. Keep it in the original packaging as well. Child-resistant packaging is a key aspect of poison prevention, especially when it comes to marijuana products. Interesting
well, if you're,
to know.
Yeah, if you're a
Go
user
ahead.
Of marijuana and you just made brownies because you're going to have a party or whatever, how can you child-proof that?
Yeah, you can't really. I mean, you know, the child-resistant packaging we're talking about is really more, you know, what you think about, like, with the prescription pill bottles, how the caps are on there, or the type of locking mechanism on these packages to prevent kids from just getting into it. And it's not, you know, you're not going to have that available if you're making, you know, homemade products. Interesting to know, you know, we do have a good portion of exposures that do happen to kids under 6 years of age. But the largest number of cases that we're getting are in children 13 to 19. So those teenage years, yeah, that's the majority of cases over the years, and including this year so far, we're actually higher this time this year as of like year to date than we were this time last year, and it's the same age group.
Why do you think that is? Availability,
you know,
or?
Well, part of it's the availability. Part of it, we've, you know, there have been some studies that have been done to look at what is it about, you know, what is peer pressure saying? Why do people use it? And part of it, to some degree, is they want to fit in. You know, you're in the middle school, high school years. Your friends are doing it. You don't really have the sense that it perhaps is going to have a long-lasting impact. You're very kind of apprehensive, not really apprehensive, but you're just, messages like don't use drugs just don't work for that age group anymore. You know,
yeah,
you just can't tell somebody. Exactly. I mean, that's certainly the argument that we can have, you know, about kind of drug prevention programs. Just don't do it doesn't work. And so we have to figure out a messaging that's targeted towards that age group, high schoolers, middle schoolers, that really gets to the point of the issue, which is there are long-term effects of this, and that's what's important to them. That's what resonates with them. That and the fear of, obviously, you know, disappointing parents. So it's important for parents to have that conversation with their kids. But I find it very interesting just because, you know, recreational marijuana is illegal if you're under 21 years of age. So, you know, there are certain products that when we get called on them, you know, if somebody calls and says, you know, my child got into marijuana gummy bears, I know that that's probably a medical marijuana product or was homemade, because marijuana gummy bears are not an approved edible for a recreational store. So the types of products that we get informs us a lot about where people are obtaining these products, and also possibly even for the use. I mean, there are many people out there that use medical marijuana that maybe have, I don't want to say questionable indications, but a very more loose definition of why they need to be on it. And I'm not here to judge or anything, but just from the scenarios.
Oh, let me judge. I mean, yes, of course. I mean, you know, I have a heel spur, therefore I have a prescription for medical marijuana. I mean, really? Okay. All right, fine.
Right. So kids, you know, kids get a hold of these products, grandparents, older siblings, and then many of them actually will use them in school, or they have more secretive ways of using it. You know, one of the big things now is vaping cannabis. So we talk about...
You mentioned that during our talks that we had the other day.
Yeah,
and I have
yeah.
never heard of that. And, of course, I know what vaping is, but vaping can... I guess I don't know how vaping works. I mean...
Yeah.
I mean,
so that,
what, yeah. explain what that is.
Yeah, so, you know, the whole kind of vaping phenomena right now with e-cigarettes, electronic hookahs, e-pens, whatever, you know, many different names, same church, different pew, that's how I describe it. These are products that are essentially, it's an electronic gadget that has a coil in there that heats up and vaporizes either a liquid or an oil, and now actually in some cases dried herbs and plant material, and produces a vapor with it that you can inhale, receive the benefit of it. So we commonly think about like liquid nicotine. That's where kind of e-cigarettes got their start. It's a new delivery method for nicotine product. Well, they now have electronic cigarettes that allow you to vape or vaporize cannabis oil. So that's the butane hash oil that we hear about. Dabs is another name for it. Wax, another name. So what that the challenge with that, of course, is that you don't have as much of that pungent smell that you do when you're smoking a joint. So in many ways, you can kind of get away with it in public, and people won't know that you're vaporizing marijuana. The other thing, too, cannabis oil or butane hash oil is a lot more concentrated when it comes to THC. Now, THC, we've heard that phrase, that name before. That's the tetrahydrocannabinol. That's that active chemical in marijuana that produces the psychoactive effects. Now, regular marijuana plant maybe has up to like 4 to 6%. We now have plants that can produce much, much higher, but cannabis oil can actually have concentrations as high, I've seen as high as like 70% THC, which is huge. You know, we really don't know what happens when you use that much concentrated marijuana. There just haven't really been studies done, which certainly begs the question, like, okay, well, why haven't they been done? And studies need to be done. That's true. There's always more research to be done to better understand it. But if you're vaping 70% THC, you know, who knows what happens. So that's where we get the kids that are presenting with the paranoia, that increased heart rate, confusion, altered mental status. I mean, all of these phrases kind of describe a similar effect. You know, they're presenting to the hospital. Some kids, especially in the teenage years, are having like acute psychotic episodes. That's been reported as well in the medical literature. So,
yeah, I think that, you know, like you were saying before about how, you know, I mean, I think the image for marijuana is that it's just some fine little, you know, Saturday night high. It's not going to hurt anybody. Da, da, da. And I really feel that people have forgotten that this is a drug. I mean, this is a drug that has some really dramatic or can have some really dramatic effects.
Right.
And
right.
Just because it's available doesn't mean that it's totally safe or benign. I mean, do you agree with that?
No, absolutely. I think you're absolutely right. I guess I would kind of liken it a little bit to, you know, alcohol. We don't really think of alcohol as a drug anymore because it's so there's so much social acceptance of it. We saw what happened with Prohibition. Obviously, you know, society did not want that. But alcohol, at the end of the day, is also a drug. Some of the arguments that I hear from people who use marijuana, and when I talk about it, is that it's not possible to overdose on marijuana. Or when we talk about poisoning, marijuana poisonings, it's not possible to be poisoned by marijuana. And perhaps it's a little bit of like, you know, semantics, the type of language that we use, the words that we use to describe it. But in the world of toxicology and poison centers, you know, a poisoning is any situation in which you, if you take a substance, whether it was intended or unintended, and it ultimately produced a negative effect. So I use marijuana, I don't get the high, I become paranoid, I get agitated. Some people would say, you know what, that's just somebody who's naive, that doesn't know what they're doing, they use too much marijuana. And that may be the case, but in the medical field, that would be considered a poisoning. You know, so poisons are no longer like the arsenic that we think about or asbestos or some of these kind of, you know, strychnine. I mean, those are poisons too, but the saying is the dose is what makes the poison. So a drug that's works normally at therapeutic doses ultimately can become a poison if you take too much of it because it interferes with those natural body processes.
Well, and you mentioned alcohol, and I think that probably alcohol is one of the most dangerous things we have out there because it can be so easily misused, even unintentionally. I mean, I know I've been served drink where, wow, that alcohol was high, but it was so disguised and it tasted good that I could have picked. Yeah, I mean, I'm not a huge fan of alcohol, so, you know, I usually do a couple sips of a drink and that's it. But I could see where, oh, wow, that tastes like soda pop. I could just chug along the whole thing.
Oh, my gosh.
And, you know, I think that there are also, and you might be more familiar with this than I am, but aren't there a lot of deaths from alcohol poisoning?
So, you know, it's interesting. When we talk about alcohol, yes, there are a lot of negative consequences from alcohol use. So not only including deaths, so we have to think about, like, there's the acute death from, like, you know, alcohol poisoning, but then there's also motor vehicle accidents that may be related to alcohol intoxication. There's some of the more long-term chronic effects, so like cirrhosis, health issues associated with alcohol use. And then there's also, you know, like the social effects of it. So, you know, divorce, domestic violence, loss of job or income. I mean, a lot of these, alcohol is such a big issue and it impacts so many aspects of our lives. So it's interesting because, you know, at the Poison Center, we also get called about alcohol, but not just your drinking alcohol. We get called about the toxic forms of alcohol. So like antifreeze, windshield wiper fluid, brake fluid. Those are all types of alcohol that people do drink either to actually get drunk because they have, you know, they're a severe alcoholic or because they're trying to commit suicide. What I find very interesting when I've looked at the numbers surrounding the alcohol, just regular drinking alcohol that we get, a few years ago when here in Washington State, when legislation was passed, I think it was like 1183 or something like that, where you could start selling liquor in the grocery stores. Do you remember that?
Yes, I do, yeah.
Yep. So in the month immediately after that legislation was passed, we saw a spike in the number of calls into the Poison Center regarding alcohol intoxication, especially amongst youth. So whether, you know,
so
was
they,
that directly,
because it was more accessible?
That's certainly one way to think about it, yes. You know, it's sometimes it's hard to come up with, like, what is the exact reason why this happened, but I think that certainly contributed to it. It was more readily available. A lot of the stores that previously, we're not selling hard liquor. We're trying to figure out, okay, what do we need to do? You know, keep it behind the shelf or keep it out in the floors. You know, so there probably was some, you know, stealing of alcohol that occurred. And that's probably what increased access. And so those numbers ultimately went down. But it was just kind of interesting to note that that's what occurred. So we saw something, I guess, similar when the retail stores opened last summer, 2014. Shortly thereafter, no, we didn't see an immediate spike in the number of marijuana calls because partly there wasn't a whole lot of product out there. As you may remember, several of the stores had to close for days on end because there wasn't enough supply. The demand was greater than the supply. And then sometime around the fall, I think, is when the supply really started picking up because in October we had a massive spike. I mean, I call it massive. It was 33 cases that 1 month that we got called about, which was more than we had at any time in the year. And I think it may have been related to supply. Now, most of the stores have actually opened in 2015, which could also be why we're seeing that the number of calls year to date is greater now, 2015, than the same time last year. So it's just interesting, and it could be too. You know, we're really pushing the Poison Center as a community resource for help. We don't report, you know, to Child Protective Services. The only time we may do that is if there's a suspicion of child abuse or neglect, which any healthcare provider is mandated by law to do so. So we're no different because we are healthcare providers here. We're not volunteers or operators. We're physicians, pharmacists, nurses, and toxicologists.
Yeah.
So when you call,
you know, if I can interject here, you mentioned about poison control not reporting. I have to tell you that my children are all grown up now, but I had one child that would eat anything. I mean, if it wasn't nailed down, it landed in her mouth. Mm-hmm. And she grabbed a handful of buttercups and ate them. I mean, yeah. And buttercups can be poison, you know. So I'm calling poison control, and you know, and I must have called poison control 4 times in a year. And then my neighbor said, stop calling poison control. They're going to send CPS out to you because your kid keeps eating these things. I've got to tell you, it did bother me. And so I started calling my pediatrician's office instead of poison control when she got into something, you know. But you're saying that's not necessarily the case, but it is something to think about?
Yeah, well, it's definitely not the case. Like I said, only in cases where there's suspicion of child abuse or neglect or elder abuse or neglect, do we get CPS or law enforcement involved or malicious intent, you know, because believe it or not, we do get calls from people that are that feel they're being poisoned by somebody or, you know, there's just malicious intent involved. Like, that's the reality that we work in. It's funny you mentioned that because when I was a kid, my mom called poison control on me as well. So I'm a survivor of...
Yeah, you critters, you know, you can be tough on us.
Yeah, so, you know, we don't do that. So that's why we encourage people to call. We've been making the number certainly more available, and I think that could also be why phone calls are going up, just because there has been an increased public awareness campaign, if you will, regarding the Poison Center and what we can do for the public.
Sure. Well, and you make a good point that just because we see some of these statistics and some of these reports, it's difficult to really pinpoint causality. I mean, just because you're seeing more calls, does that mean, you know, I mean, you have to really be careful not to make assumptions because then you could be working on a problem that's really not the problem. So just because there are more cases, it seems, or more calls coming in, it does seem logical that it has something to do with availability, but it could also have something to do with lack of education. I mean, I see in our state, we're in Washington, but there are other states here and other states that have legalized marijuana, and there are other states that are contemplating it. We have really developed a casual attitude that, oh, it's just marijuana, ha, 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 you know. And I, you know, in my supposition is that, or my hypothesis is that it's that casual attitude toward this potentially dangerous substance that can contribute to some of these accidental ingestions. I mean, that just seems logical to me. And so, you know, while I don't, you know, begrudge anybody their good time, I think that you need to be realistic about what you're doing to have that good time. And as with everything, whether it's, you know, lattes or, you know, chocolate bonbons, there are a percentage of us that will overindulge. And that becomes problematic. And when you're overindulging, when you have a very casual attitude toward the substance, I can see that it's just a perfect storm for having children become unintentionally poisoned by these substances that they get their hands on.
Yeah, go ahead.
You're
absolutely right. Yeah, I was going to say, one of the things I hear from the community, not only regarding marijuana, but also e-cigarettes, is that the responsibility doesn't just fall on the manufacturers.
Of course not.
Truly, it takes a village. The responsibility falls on everybody. So we certainly rely on the manufacturers of these products, whether it be like an e-cigarette product or a marijuana, to make sure there's appropriate warning labels, safety labels, ingredients. You know, on a lot of the e-cigarette liquid nicotine products, there's not really a great ingredient list. You know, they say it's only four. You know, how do we really know that? It doesn't go through any sort of a quality assurance testing per se. The marijuana,
yeah,
especially the recreational marijuana, is definitely a lot better because it is regulated by the state. It does get tested. So certainly they're doing their part in trying to, as much as they can, to make sure to prevent kids from getting into these products. So then this is where kind of education comes in on the caregiver, adult parent side to say, okay, you know, the industry is doing everything it can according to state regulations to prevent kids and youth from getting into these products. So now what can we do to help you prevent this exposure from happening in your home? So,
yeah,
you know, I mentioned before, yeah, locking it up, keeping it out of the reach of kids. Many people, they have like a special container, maybe like a shoebox or just a box that they keep under the bed or in a dresser somewhere that has their marijuana product in it. So if you have something like that, make sure it's locked and don't have the key laying around. Don't refer to it as candy. Don't use it around kids. A lot of it's common sense, but also on the other hand, you also quickly, especially in the poison center world, you realize that common sense is not so common.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
You know,
I want to interrupt you briefly. I've been so enwrapped by our conversation that I've forgotten to give our call out number. Give us a call if you have a scenario you'd like to share with us or a question. Give us a call, 646-378-0430. That's 646-378-0430. I do have our chat room open, but I got to tell you, I'm having some technical difficulties there, so I'm not going to give out the chat information. But give us a call, 646-378-0430. I want to also talk with you a little bit, Dr. Garrard, about other things that hurt kids. I mean, you're talking about the vape thing. I mean, that was completely new to me. I 20th century woman here, you know. I mean,
right.
I didn't even know they were doing that. So what are some of the other things where, you know, kids are being exposed to dangerous products and the potential for poisoning from them?
Right. So, I guess just to kind of put it in context, you know, so the Poison Center of 2014 received almost 64,000 calls from Washingtonians, whether they lived in Washington State or they had a Washington cell phone number and were calling from out of state. Of those 64,000 calls, only 245 were in marijuana. So very, very small numbers. So what's accounting for the majority of the calls? Well, in kids under 6 years of age, it's pretty, you know, it's like really household stuff. It's pretty innocuous. I mean, most of it's like diaper rash. We do have acetaminophen, otherwise known as like Tylenol, which is really, really common in cough and cold products. There are so many different formulations of it, concentrations of it, that it's very easy for parents to get confused. And there's also a number of different flavorings, you know, that make it taste really, really good for kids. Other stuff is like toothpaste, foreign bodies, so things like pennies, magnets. The other thing is laundry pods are very, very dangerous. There's been a lot of issues around that in the country, around those Tide laundry pods that you just easily throw in there can cause severe, severe damage in children. They can end up in an ICU on a ventilator. And it's really just soap, but because of the way it's packaged, you know, it's under pressure. Kids bite into it because it's so brightly colored. It explodes in their mouth. They aspirate it, meaning they get it into their lungs, which causes a lot of breathing difficulties. And it's, like I said, it's, I mean, kids will end up in a coma and on a ventilator. We've had a death here in the state. It was in an older adult with dementia, but it was a similar process. But there have been deaths across the country associated with those particular products. So certainly poison prevention right there. Keep them out of reach of kids. Magnets is another thing that a lot of people don't think about with youth, you know, young kids getting into. But magnets can be very, very dangerous, and there have been deaths associated with magnets because it gets lodged in the intestines, especially when you have two magnets and they're on either side of a, you know, the colon or the small intestines, and they stick together. Now you have that tissue in between the magnets, and it ultimately causes perforates, or, you know, tears through the tissue. You have a hole, you have internal bleeding, and then ultimately a very poor outcome. So it's a little bit of a horror story, but this is the reality. You know, there are certainly products out there that we may not think about being a problem, but in reality are a big issue. You know, we also have the grandparents' medication, so a lot of the prescription drugs that are out there. Grandparents can be on average on about 20 medications, many of which are like cardiac, so used for things like high blood pressure, heart failure, arrhythmias, stroke prevention, so you have blood thinners. And those can also cause significant problems in kids. When we think about the whole concept of one pill can kill, especially in a child, you know, maybe a 10-kilo, 20-pound kid, there are quite a few substances that fall under that. So a lot of, like I said, sure, a lot of the cardiac medications, antidepressants that are really potent. And now kids these days themselves are also on medication. So, you know, medication for ADHD, they're on things like Adderall or Concerta. And then they get come in contact with like an herbal over-the-counter product that also has stimulant properties, which only compounds the effect of the original prescription drug.
So, you know, I must say that one of the things that just absolutely upsets me is when people seem to think that if it came from a health food store that, mm-hmm. you know, it's fine. You know, I think if one more person says to me, oh, you should go get this, it's chemical-free. Really, nothing is chemical-free. The world is made up of chemicals. You know,
right.
Why are you thinking that something is chemical-free? You know, I mean, that's an impossibility. I think what we do is we convince ourselves of certain things, and that kind of harkens back to the whole premise behind the show, is that we've convinced ourselves that marijuana is innocuous, when in fact it's not. Neither is Tylenol. Neither, you know, if it's inappropriately used or given to you know, accessible to people it shouldn't be given to. So I think
right.
that we do have this notion that if it's, you know, from a health food store, it's going to be fine. And we tend to not monitor that substance. A lot of our medicines that we have today came from nature. You know, we just
mm-hmm.
learned how to synthesize it.
Exactly.
You know, instead of waiting for the tree to grow. And it seems to me so many people forget that. They seem to think that, you know, if they chew a leaf, that that's going to be better for them than taking a pill. But in fact,
yep.
all of these substances can be dangerous. And we really need to be vigilant when we're talking about children.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my soapbox. You can have the soapbox back now, okay?
No, you raised a really good point about, you know, isolating natural compounds, you know, making a synthetic version of them. So, many, you know, you may remember, many of your listeners may remember and have been familiar with the term bath salts as a drug of abuse from
yes.
a few years ago, and it's still a big problem. So bath salts are a synthetic version of a plant that grows in the Middle East and Eastern Africa. You know, so the plant itself is called khat, like K-H-A-T. It's illegal here in the U.S. You can't buy it. You can't grow it. But what they did, it's basically chewed like coca leaves in South America. Provides a mild stimulant effect, be the equivalent of like an espresso here, you know, Starbucks here in Seattle. It's just
yeah.
so culturally accepted. And so now we've isolated that active compound, and that's how we got bath salts. And they're only called bath salts because that's the term they use to help them fly under the radar. You know, when you're talking about a bath salt.
Ah, I see. Because
yeah,
there really are such things as bath salts. I mean, I remember as a kid,
right.
the old ladies would get
oh,
bath
yeah.
salts and actually put them in the, you know, I'm saying that
yep.
is a product that was available, but
exactly.
now you're saying
like,
that's...
Yeah, like Calgon, or, you know, Bed Bath & Beyond bath salts. This is not what we're talking about. What we're talking about
yeah.
here
no, okay.
are actual synthetic drugs, amphetamines, stimulants that produce, you know, extremely violent behavior. We've seen the news show, the news stuff on TV, you know, people tearing their clothes off. You know, remember the case in Miami a handful of years ago,
the guy that
was eating the guy's face off. They said, well, he was negative for everything on the drug screen. Well, they were so new on the market that we didn't have the capability to detect them yet. I guarantee if we were to do the test today, it would have shown a bath salt or a synthetic marijuana product. So that just kind of goes to show you, like you were saying, is that, you know, a lot of stuff that's out there is natural, but when we isolate it and start making synthetic versions of it, it's a lot more dangerous. It's like 10, 100 times more potent. A lot of the synthetic marijuana products are about 800 times more potent than regular marijuana.
Yeah.
And that produces a lot of problems, too.
So what are some of the other substances that are out there that people are using and having around their houses that they need to be worried that their kids might get into? And again, I'm talking little kids, because we'll talk about the teenagers in a minute.
Yeah. So little kids, you know, typically what they're getting into, it's just regular common household products, so cleaning supplies. So I would suggest for any parent, any sort of strong laundry detergent, including those Tide laundry pods that I mentioned earlier, Drano products, so anything that's used to unclog pipes, you know, that would have a very highly basic or acidic compound in it, absolutely needs to be locked up in a way, kept out of reach of kids. We've had cases where kids have gotten a hold of a Drano bottle and drank the Drano and have had to have emergent surgery because it basically completely destroyed their esophagus. So those products certainly need to be kept out. I mentioned magnets and pennies, obviously, things like that. And just, you know, over-the-counter products. Kids do not need to be administering it to themselves. Parents need to give it to the children. They need to use the measuring spoon that came with it, not use a regular household teaspoon or tablespoon, because those are not calibrated, so the measurement is not exact. And if you don't have one, the pharmacy will always have one that they can give you. Because that's a common area where we get calls about, you know, I accidentally gave my child too much of this over-the-counter product. Because I used the wrong measuring spoon. And it doesn't mean you're a bad parent. I want to put that out there. None of this means or implies that you're a bad parent. What it says, though, is that, you know, we need to have more education, more products available to help parents in that. Other things, obviously, you know, like I mentioned, grandparents' medication, plants. Most of the time, household plants are not going to be toxic. We talk about around, like, the holiday time, things like of course, the name is escaping me right now. Poinsettias.
Poinsettias.
You know, there's this whole, oh, my gosh, poinsettias are poisonous. Poinsettias are not poisonous. The only reason we got the thought that they were is years ago there was a case report from Hawaii where a child was found dead next to a poinsettia plant. That's where that comes from. But
again, we go back
to
causality. Yeah.
I know. That's not, you know, they are maybe a choking hazard, but they are not poisonous. You know, but there are certainly, you know, just in the backyard, especially here in the Pacific Northwest, mushrooms grow abundantly. Careful with that. You know, we have a lot of kids that will be playing in the backyard and will get a hold of mushrooms that are growing back there. And we do have poisonous mushrooms in the state. They grow naturally. We have a lot of immigrant families here who foraged for mushrooms back in their home country. And they go foraging for mushrooms here, and they pick a mushroom that looks very similar to what they had back then or back there, and it's not the same thing. You know, 99 times out of 100, it's not the same thing. And we have mushrooms that can cause liver failure, and that's very, very bad.
Yeah. So for little kids, the bottom line is you just have to be vigilant if you have a little kid.
Yeah.
You have to be vigilant, and it's exhausting. I mean, you know, anybody who's raised a family will tell you that. It is exhausting, and you get tired of it, and you just, you know, but nevertheless, you have to. Go ahead.
I was just going to say real quick, you know, just to help parents, especially of little kids, one of the things the Poison Center has and we can do is send out, like, Mr. Yuck packets, so things like with magnets and stickers, with Mr. Yuck stickers, so that parents can put these on products to identify them as being, this is a poison, don't drink or don't touch, or ask a parent if you ever want to touch anything, you know, or put it in your mouth, you must ask a parent. So those are things that we can send out to the public Anytime they give us a call and say, you know, I'd like a packet of stickers to use around my household. We have brochures regarding poison prevention. So there's a lot that we can do for parents that they may not be aware of.
Well, and I suggest that people locate their local poison control center and contact for that, because I suspect that they're all about the same. Otherwise, Doctor, you're going to have people from Tanzania calling you and asking for a Mr. Yuck sticker. So contact your local poison control center. Or health department. I'm sure that you know, this is not a brand new or unique idea to make those stickers available. So contact your local poison control or your local health department, and I suspect that you'll be able to find those Mr. Yuck stickers that you can use in your home. Let's move to older kids.
Yes.
Kids that are 12, 13, 14, who are old enough to know that they don't drink the Drano. But they're also old enough to know that, wow, it's really cool to have alcohol or marijuana or some of these other substances that, you know, I mean, the mushrooms. I mean, 100 years ago, I used to do some pre-sentence reports, and every fall we would have just a nice increase there in, what do you call that, when you go on property you're not supposed to, with people with young people looking for the magic mushroom, you know. So, you know, those are the older kids. So what are they getting into that we should be aware of?
And so,
I suspect that since marijuana is available, it's just like the alcohol. We've established an age limit for it, but, you know, how effective is it, you know, the kids are going to get this stuff.
So
what kinds of stuff are they into?
So when we look at, like, the top 10 substances, so to say, for that age group, you know, the 13 to 18 years of age, 2014, the number one substance that we actually got called on was ibuprofen. So
really?
Very, very interesting. Yeah, very interesting.
Can you get high from ibuprofen? I mean, I don't...
yeah, no,
I'm going to go look for my bottle of Tylenol here.
Yeah, so you can't get high from ibuprofen, but... you know, it's a painkiller. So you start thinking about, especially in those, you know, down 13, 14, puberty. A lot of young girls are starting to have their first period, for instance, learning to kind of self-medicate and treat themselves. So what we're finding in this particular age group, and I'll go over some of the other substances, but this is going from more of a unintentional ingestion, meaning, oh, I didn't mean to do this, to, okay, like I meant to use this drug. I either used it incorrectly. Or what we're starting to see now, actually, and this may surprise many, many listeners, is that we actually have suicide attempts as young as 12, 13 years of age. And so some of the substances that we get called about are reflective of that. So, you know, ibuprofen was at the top. That's, you know, acetaminophen, it comes in at number two. We have antipsychotics that fall into this, are in the top 10 as well, followed by antidepressants and then sedatives. And then alcohol is actually in there also. Marijuana didn't make the top 10 list, but alcohol did. So these substances tell me it's either abuse, so like alcohol, the sedatives like the regular, like a Xanax or a Valium, that oftentimes is is certainly a common drug of abuse. So a lot of youth are abusing that or misusing that. And then some of the other stuff with the antidepressants, oftentimes those are suicide attempts. So these are real prescription medications. There are also over-the-counter stuff, like I mentioned, ibuprofen, Benadryl was in the mix, acetaminophen, because it is readily available. And so they're using these substances either to treat pain or to, you know, in self-harm. Benadryl, you can actually, I mean, kids use Benadryl to get high off of.
Oh, really?
You can have hallucinations at very, very high doses with Benadryl. But you can also have seizures, you can have cardiac arrhythmias, and you can certainly have a very negative outcome. So that is not a good drug either in excess. It can be amazing for allergies.
What is it? Well, this is a little off topic, but I think it belongs in this discussion somewhere. What is it about us, especially when we're young, that we want to seek unbalance? I'm not sure I'm phrasing this correctly, but we want to seek, and it seems to be worldwide. We want the buzz. We want the high.
Yeah.
Why?
It's interesting. I mean,
why? And I've got 5 minutes. Okay.
Exactly. I think it's an issue of, especially when we look at today's world and everything that's going on, a lot of youth are seeking an escape. There's a lot more pressure and stress on youth today than I think perhaps there have been in years past. There's expectations, social expectations, you know, the expectation to do well in school and succeed in society. And it is a lot of pressure for a group that maybe don't have great coping skills yet, that don't know how to deal with the pressure and the stress of life. And so many people use these substances like sedatives and opiates, prescription painkillers, so to say, to numb themselves, to feel good for a fleeting moment. And my argument, you know, is like, it's just that, it's a fleeting moment. The reality, while it may be hard right now, ultimately in the long run is better for you. And there's life can be so full and rich if you just kind of trudge through it a little bit and open up, you know. Like I said, it takes a village. A lot of people don't talk with each other anymore. We have new forms of social media, texting, and so it really removes us from each other. And we're now really living in silos. We're not living as a community, which is unfortunate. You know, it's really unfortunate for where we are and for youth, I think, that are coming up through the ages.
Yeah. I think, you know, although this is really another discussion, I think it fits with what you're saying. I was speaking with somebody the other day about the frustration that I feel when I have a problem, say, with a company, and you go online, you try to track down the company. You don't even have phone numbers listed anymore. You're supposed to email. So you email, and then somebody comes back and says, well, you have to do the da-da-da and the da-da-da and the da-da-da. And then you respond, I already did the da-da-da and the da-da-da, and it's not working. That's why I'm contacting you. You know,
yeah, exactly.
I mean, it's the level of frustration of not being able to just pick up the phone, call somebody, and get somebody who cares about a resolution to this is extraordinary for my age group. And I was talking to a friend saying, I feel so sorry for young people today because it wasn't this way 10 years ago. And if it gets, you know, worse 10 years from now than it is today, you know, it's young people that I have such empathy for that they're going to have to deal with this. And her point is, but they don't feel your frustration because they don't have the expectation that they will get the problem resolved.
Right. Well, that's where we have drugs like ecstasy that open people up to schmoozing with other folks, you know. I mean,
really?
You know, I mean, ecstasy opens you up and makes you more empathic and connects you with other people, like a social lubricant. And there's a pretty big, you know, use of ecstasy in this country among youth and young adults, and that may be part of it. So it's an interesting point to explore.
It is. As I said, a little off topic, but I think sometimes, you know, it's hard to separate all of these things, when you get right down to it. But I think her point was that, you know, they are not expecting that. I feel the frustration because I expect that there will be customer service or problem resolution. If if you remove that expectation, I'm not left with frustration and anger. I'm left with empty.
Yeah.
And that must be very, very hard for young people. Okay, you know, that's my Norman Mailer moment, I guess. the other thing, the other point that I want to make is that for generations, for thousands of years, people have been saying it's harder for the coming generation.
Right.
Or the generation that, you know, is living with worse or it's more difficult, da-da-da-da. So I although I appreciate what you're saying, I kind of wonder, okay, but is it really that much harder? I don't know. It's different.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
It's all a matter of perspective and experience, I suppose.
Yeah. So, but we're left with the same problems because it seems like for, you know, generations, you know, young people have been seeking that disconnect, that the high, you know, if you will. And so what I'm hearing you say is that, or at least what I hope we've done in this show, is we've talked about this unintentional poisoning that occurs because we either can't monitor children or we don't know how to do it correctly as far as storing these things and getting rid of them. Maybe we have too casual an attitude about things like marijuana and alcohol. Maybe we have too casual an attitude about the meds that are in grandma's, you know, purse or that's in the Tylenol in our medicine cabinets. Maybe we need to take these things more seriously and realize that while they may seem innocuous, that they in fact have potential to do some tremendous damage. Am I summing that up correctly, do you think?
No, absolutely. And I was just going to make just two kind of key points. You know, we talk about all the medication that's available in the household, and people oftentimes wonder, what do I do with it when I no longer need it? And I do want to say that there is, you know, there are national Take Back Your Med drug take-back days, essentially. There's one actually coming up on September 26th through the DEA, the Drug Enforcement Agency, and it's being coordinated with local police stations. So people can find that information on like a National Drug Take Back Day website. We're going to be posting that information on the Washington Poison Center website as well, which is www.wapc.org. And if individuals don't have the Poison Center number programmed into their cell phone, you never know when you're going to need it. And even if you don't have kids, if you just have a question on, you know, is there a drug interaction between this, or if you're a nursing mother, can I use this drug while I'm nursing, or if you're pregnant, what have you. Older adults, too. I took a double dose of my medication. Am I going to be okay? It's a toll-free number. It's 24/7. It's 1-800-222-1222.
Okay. So, and that national number, 1-800-222-1222, can put you in touch with your local organization, at least in the United States.
Correct.
It'll
route you to your state one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And again, I suspect that whatever country you're listening from, I'm sure they have something similar. These problems
yep,
are universal, not just
yep,
American.
Yep, Europe has a poison
center. In doing my research, I also found another thing that we didn't talk about, and that is the art supplies that we use with our kids. Some of that stuff is toxic. You have to make sure that you get the non-toxic art stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you're buying all this stuff for going back to school and whatever, make sure, even if it costs more, get the non-toxic. Because you know what? I was a kid once. I know how many kids eat glue and paste and take a bite out of crayons, and, you know, I mean, it happens, okay?
Yeah.
Make sure you get the non-toxic stuff. One other point that I saw is that we should probably address is that you have visitors coming to your home. Well, you can't exactly say, you know, give me your purse, I want to go through it, you know, for toxic substances. What do you do when somebody comes to your house? You know, they've got their purse, they've got their jacket, they've got, you know, and they throw it over a chair, and you have a kid. I mean, how can you guard against unintentional poisoning with something like that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's honestly, you have to have that honest conversation with the parents or whoever's coming to visit, especially if it's a grandparent. And you know, in talking about this, this would be a conversation I would have if and when I have kids is, you know, if my child is going over to somebody's house and I know they have a gun in the house, I'm going to have a conversation with them because that's a big issue, you know. That's a real concern. If I know that they're just kind of leaving medications laying out, like, that's a risk. That's a potential exposure there for a child and could be very dangerous and have life-threatening consequences. So I think if you're having visitors, making sure that they certainly keep them locked up, say, this is the policy within our house, you know, a household policy of how we handle medications, you know, and just be frank about it. It's your home. You set the rules, you know. I think it's a great point. I just don't know if there's necessarily a great way to go about it other than having that honest conversation and saying, this is what we do here in this household.
Yeah. Well, and then we have the issue of going to other places. I have a service dog, and I can't tell you how many times I go into a store and I'll look down and all of a sudden my service dog is like licking at something and there's a pill on the floor, you know, in the grocery store. I have no clue what this pill is, right?
Right.
If my dog can get to it, I got news, the kids can get to it too. So what do you do when your child has ingested something and you don't have a clue what it is?
Yeah, so that's another one of the scenarios where call the poison center. We can try to work through it. Oftentimes if there's a similar, you know, a similar pills that were on the floor, we can help identify that substance to figure out, okay, is this going to be a problem? If ultimately we don't know what it is because you happen to be, you know, you're in a public store, grocery store, what have you, depending on what information we have, we may just recommend going to the healthcare facility for evaluation just to make sure everything's going to be okay. But if we do have a sense of what it is, it gives us a better idea of what recommendations we can give, what to really watch out for, if there are any sort of home care techniques that we can, or tactics that we can advise you on in terms of what to do, or at least let you know, hey, if this symptom happens, give us a call back. We'll reevaluate and let you know whether or not you really need to be in a hospital or not. Those are always the problematic scenarios.
Well, and obviously, by the time, I mean, if symptoms occur and you don't know where they came from, it's never a bad idea to seek medical attention.
Exactly, and that's just the thing. If there's a medical emergency, always call 911. If it's poison-related, Poison Center will get involved at some point, but if a person's not breathing or is unconscious or what have you, like, you need to be calling 911.
I was reading, in doing my research for the show, I was reading, and of course my focus was originally on just the marijuana issue, because I do think we tend to be very casual about it. It's kind of a nudge, nudge, wink, wink thing when you're talking about marijuana. And I didn't, until I saw the report from King County, I didn't really make the association that this, in fact, could be something really dangerous for kids. I mean, I just didn't even think about it. It's kind of like, oh, yeah, well, you know, all the old, you know, gray-haired ponytailed guys will, you know, have a good time now. You know, I mean, I'm just, you know, it didn't cross my mind that this could be a real threat to children. But one of the things that I think that we need to look at is our pets, too. You know, and I know that's not your thing, but do you ever get calls about, you know, pets?
So we did. We do. We used to actually take pet calls, you know, for pets that got poisoned or ingested something. Given that we're primarily a human-focused poison center, we decided to basically work with the ASPCA, which they have a direct poison center number. And so we now direct those callers to contact the ASPCA. Now, that's just for Washington State. There are other poison centers in the country that may have decided to handle pet poison calls as well, because of the resources they have available, and that's perfectly fine. But you're right. Pets get into a lot of stuff, and those can also be problematic. And so they certainly deserve help as well.
Yeah. I think that, you know, what's significant, I think, about our conversation, and we are starting to wrap it up now, is that we have to take some of these substances seriously. And even though, as I said, there's kind of a wink, wink, nudge, nudge thing about marijuana right now, and it's not just Washington and Oregon and the states that have made it legalized, but I think it's throughout the nation. It's kind of like, well, where's the harm here? And, you know, people want it's no different than alcohol and blah, blah, blah. And that's fine. I don't have any argument with that. But I do think that it's easy to lose sight of the fact that these things, just like the Tylenol, can actually be potentially lethal in the wrong hands. And so we need to remember and take these things seriously, make sure that we store them properly, make sure that we monitor children. And if we have suspicions that there's problems, seek help, and one of those places is the Poison Control Center. And again, that national number for poison control is 800-222-1222. I've learned a lot here. I'm kind of glad we did this. This is kind of a different topic than what I usually cover, Dr. Garrard, but I'm really glad that we did. I'm really glad that we did, and I appreciate your experience. I learned some things, actually. You know, I mean, who knew you could vape marijuana? I mean, who knew?
I know.
I didn't.
Well, I appreciate
the
opportunity.
Well, there's a way, right?
Yep.
We have about a minute left, and I want to see if there's just real quick anything that you would like to add that maybe we didn't cover or that you would like to just reiterate. What would you leave us with?
Well, I just certainly want to say thank you. This is an important topic for many people to just be aware of. You know, poison prevention is huge. Unintentional poisonings are, in many states, are a leading cause of death in kids. And so it's super important that we have the conversation. We work with community organizers, with parents on how to protect their children, not just when they're kids, but how to have the conversation as they grow up into their teenage years and young adults to equip them, because, you know, the world is very different now. There's so many new substances available, and we need to have that conversation. And so the local, you know, your local poison center can help you out with that in terms of public education.
Great. Thank you so much. I usually end the show with a quote. It was really hard to find a quote on you know, unintentional poisoning, I got to tell you. But I did find a quote that I think we can kind of work into the conversation here, and it is by Everett Koop, the former Surgeon General. You can't talk of the dangers of snake poisoning and not mention snakes. Now, I'll let you puzzle out how I made that association with our conversation today. Thank you so much for joining us. And,
my pleasure.
Next week, we're going to have an interesting topic next week. I'm still working on that memory expert, so hopefully we'll get that person next week. Meanwhile, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you, Dr. Gerard. See you next
thank
week.
Thank you.
Three women. Three ways.
Bye-bye.